views and opinions expressed on Geeks Under the Influence are that of the panelists and not of our sponsors, Amazon.com and TeePublic. Parental discretion is advised.
How badass are you when you can suck the soul out of a dragon?
Right, right.
When a dragon's like, motherfucker, and he's like, oh no, motherfucker.
Yeah.
But I really hope they incorporate more Lovecraftian elements in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and especially with Sam Raimi.
Come on,
Sam Raimi doing Doctor Strange.
Come on.
So ready. Right. Have you seen What If?
I was going to say, we're going to do a What If episode, but that episode was strange. There is some Lovecraftian shit going on there.
Yeah. No, that's...
MCU's getting a little darker, thank you. They're going to bring it in.
You know, honestly, a lot of the movies have gotten a little edgier, a little darker, a little more talking about real topics, you know, and I'm kind of here for it.
But I am actually surprised that the Marvel Zombies episode of What If didn't hit in October. Like, that seems like the right time.
They could have. They fucked it
makes
up.
Me think I think what's it was
just, there were people being like, no, but we got a Marvel Zombies episode. Like, they're just waiting. Like, can we do it number one? They're like, no, we can't. We can't spill our seed on the first episode. We've got to, like, build up to.
Yeah.
Episode five, six, seven, fuck. Okay, fine. Mid. We'll do mid.
Who's going to take on the live action property of that? Because that needs to happen, too.
No shit.
Right.
Sam Raimi does well with Doctor Strange. Hey, we're going to give you your own trilogy of Marvel Zombies. Please.
Well, I think with the multiverse happening...
Sam Raimi would make it Evil Dead-ish. I don't want that with Marvel Zombies. You know what I mean?
With the multiverse happening, you can incorporate basically every superhero thing that's ever happened in Marvel, even like Blade and fucking Howard the Duck. Fuck it. Why not? It just incorporated as different multiverses. It's kind of the same thing that Cabin in the Woods did with horror movies.
Honestly, they need to do it soon. Just so they can have, like, Bruce Campbell show up because of the Ash versus the Marvel Zombies.
Oh,
like,
my God. Oh, that'd be fucking incredible.
We got to get this going soon.
Yes,
seriously.
Please.
Yeah. Come on,
we got
man.
To. So, yeah. We are talking about, like, horror-themed music. We're talking about horror movies. We're talking about the incorporation of all these different movies and how they work together and how they've inspired us to be gigantic nerds in the genre of horror because it is the season of horror. It's spooky
season. It is upon
us. This is the official first episode of Potoween!
Woo!
Woo! Now, just to give you a heads up on what's happening with GUI, because of all the releases that are happening this year, because of all the delays from last year, not all of the episodes in October for Geeks Under the Influence will be horror-themed. There will be some. Don't get me wrong. There will be several horror-related episodes, but we are also going to have to cover Venom and a bunch of other stuff happening in October.
Dude. Venom's dark. Yeah. It's horror.
It's kind of dark.
Oh my God, yeah.
Yeah. But that is a reminder that we do have a completely horror-centric podcast on the network that my lovely co-host here runs called From the Mouths of Madness.
Yes, we do. Yes, we do.
We'll be living it up fucking hard in October.
So what's crazy is, in October, the only thing horror-related that's coming out is Halloween Kills, which I say the only thing, but yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's Halloween Kills.
It is Halloween Kills. Yeah.
So... But I mean, that's the big thing that we will be taking over to make sure we get that out, and that actually will also be our 100th episode.
Ooh. Fuck yes! That's
nice. Oh my gosh! Congrats!
I have no idea what to do because COVID, but yeah. I mean, I'd be just like, hey, it's our 100th episode. Like, you might see it on social media. That's about all I got because fucking COVID. I mean, I don't know what else to do.
But yeah, we are making sure that everybody has a lot of content to play with during the Halloween season, and that's part of the reason why we're doing this episode. We've got From the Mouse Madness stuff. We've got some stuff with GUI that we're going to be releasing as well as a bunch of stuff on social media that we're going to be playing with, whether it be just fun picture content or little mini videos, all sorts of fun, just keeping you in the spooky spirit. And a way to do that as well is to give you a list of movies that you may or may not have seen to watch every day of the Halloween season. So we've got, as some of our longtime listeners might be familiar with, our 31 Days of Halloween episode.
Yes.
Yes.
It's going to become our annual. I think we just need to call that now, our annual.
It is our annual,
It's a very fun episode. Yes. It's a little different than our normal shows because we aren't talking about one single subject. We've got, alphabetically and numerically, October, a couple days before October, moving into all of Halloween, a different movie for you to watch.
Every day.
So we're going round robin on the table, and everybody got their letters to come up with their own movies. We are not repeating movies from previous years. We made sure to pick new ones. So on that note, let's get into the episode. Welcome to Geeks Under the Influence, the first Potoween episode of the year. 31 days of Halloween. Welcome.
Yes.
Woo. Yeah.
All right, before we get started, let's go with our panel. We've got some returning folks that always hit up GUI during the Halloween season. We've got our seasoned horror nerds here with us, dressing in fucking pitch perfect attire with some spooky Hawaiian shirt action.
I like
We've got from Synthetic Nightmare and like the other 83 things that you do, photographer, magician,
so
like Hell Kitten stuff and farmer, beekeeper.
Yeah.
Will McCobb is here.
Hello, everybody. I'm excited to be back.
I'm excited to have a friend that's a spooky beekeeper.
Oh like, my
that
God.
Makes me very happy.
Yes.
Me too.
I'm cool. You know,
cool.
It's all right.
I'm cool with it. You know, I'm cool.
Yeah. Keep the bees or die. How's that sound?
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much how that works.
Yeah, this is a gentleman that definitely is very much on the line of like, don't use certain products to kill your weeds.
No, absolutely not. Plant pollinator things. Grow other things other than your lawn. And if you have if you have your grass, let it grow tall so there's some weeds in there.
Hell yeah.
Clover, dandelions. All of that.
I was hoping you were going to go on a Bubba Gump trip on just different things that you could grow besides grass.
Yeah. Oh, I could.
Yeah.
I'm sure you could.
So you
could
just run out of shit. Arugula. I don't know.
Like basil.
What would you? Yeah. Exactly. What would you recommend people to plant in their yard for people that don't want tall yards?
Don't want tall yards?
Yeah.
Clover.
That's low lying. Yeah.
Yeah. Dude, a clover yard is one. It's low lying. It's you can still mow it down a little bit once in a while.
Mm-hmm.
It'll have nice flowers. You can get different color flowers of clover. You know, it's fun.
Yeah.
It's fun.
That's
it's
awesome.
Very pretty.
Because a lot of people don't like weeds in the yard.
It's so also,
and a lot of people don't like tall yards. So it's kind of trying to find that balance, right? Because I get a lot of weeds are ugly. You know, but
I get it. Clover.
Yeah. Clover. There you go.
Just load it with. It's fast growing. It'll fill in a bare spot quick.
Okay.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah. Hey, that's something for those that like their grass short.
Speaking of filling in a bare spot, I heard that about her love life. We've got our next panelist on the table.
Yes.
The purveyor of nerdcropolis.com. Not just a blog anymore. Also,
not just a blog anymore.
Does some podcasting.
Just when you thought it was safe to go back in the water.
Yeah.
I am back.
You are
with a vengeance.
I'm so excited. This is your first time back in this version of the studio.
Yeah, because I have been slowly emerging from a pandemic haze of depression and anxiety, and I'm so excited to be back with
just
you guys.
In time
you guys
to watch movies
so
full
energy.
Of depression and anxiety.
Yeah.
So
I think like any horror fan can relate to that, so I'm so jazzed to be back with you guys.
Absolutely, we're happy to have you here. Katie from Nerdcropolis.
Hey y'all.
Yay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely check out nerdcropolis.com.
Yep.
Microblog and occasional podcast as well.
Yes,
right?
Absolutely, check out my blog nerdcropolis.com. check me out on Instagram at nerdcropolis, the Twitters. I'm all over the place, so
I love following you on Instagram because I get
thank you
watched the most garbage horror movies.
I love them. I love them all.
The movies where I look at them like, I'm not watching that, and then like
so
a day later you're
them.
Like, y'all, I watched this garbage movie so bad I loved it.
You just recently went through the entire Wrong Turn series.
Yes.
And after one, I don't know what the fuck you I don't know why
I
don't know why I remember seeing a clip
crowd of
from
you.
Five, because that's the one with Doug Bradley. I'm like, this movie is fucking
That's why
trash.
I'm here. I am here to do
like,
the things for you all and to report on all of it.
It's so bad. But you
but
trucked
also
on through.
A perfect pick for 31 Days of Halloween for sure. As
absolutely.
Yeah. Definitely.
Yes, yes.
Also,
Katie brings the game. She brings the game.
Speaking of bringing the game, the gentleman that runs the horror-centric podcast on the Geeks Under the Influence Network, about to hit episode 100 during the Halloween season. Perfect timing.
I know. Like, I was like, I couldn't believe it. I was like, wait, 100's a big deal, but also during October, like, oh, God.
Epic.
Kind of got a little hard.
If you look at the numbers on the number of podcasts that are around long enough to hit 100, you're in, like, the upper 5% percentile of podcasts, of overall of all podcasts that are made. It's a rarity. It's kind of similar to TV shows where 100 episodes is a big thing.
You're
for
syndicated.
TV shows, where you syndicate. It's kind of that way where 100 episodes is really hard to get to because it requires a lot of energy, a lot of work. And you can definitely tell that this gentleman next to me puts a lot of work in, both as a dude that helps me curate this fucking network and Geeks Under the Influence and GUI Nights and his show From the Mouse of Madness, my partner in crime, Lowdown Brown MacGyver.
What's going on, everybody? You spooky motherfuckers.
Spooky!
Spooky. I'm really stoked. Like, we were planning, you know, what the extra slots we had for, you know, for spooky stuff, because like Hobbit said, we are full with all the releases because everyone was trying to like get their own nut out in October and November. Yeah. Apparently, Jesus Christ, it's ridiculous. Say, so, hey, you realize if everyone's doing it, no one's gonna be the number one bad mamma jamma, right? You guys need to calm the fuck down.
You know what month is good to release a James Bond movie? Spooky season.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
How about you move it to like Thanksgiving? How about like right? Thanksgiving? Like, what the fuck, man? Anyway.
Nothing says family like a British spy.
Yeah, no shit.
Nothing happens in January.
Hold on.
Choose January.
I'm a misogynistic British spy. That says
spooky. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I love James Bond, though. Especially Daniel Craig. Daniel Craig, yeah. James Bond's awesome.
Same.
Anyway, and we were discussing this, and I was like, well, fuck, dude. This is why I say this is the annual, because the first thing that came to my head was to do this calendar again, to bring you guys something completely different this year, because we never will repeat movies. And that's the big thing.
Yep.
And the horror series is that vast. The horror genre is so vast that we never have to repeat movies.
100%.
Yep.
You know, so, yep.
And it's something for everyone.
Exactly.
Yeah, no matter if you're a diehard horror fan or if you're just casual viewer who just goes to see the mainstream ones, we got something for everyone.
And so also in the style, we're going to have some lighthearted, we're going to have maybe some family, we're going to have the grotesque, yeah, and the fucking,
I love that,
depraved. It's all going to be a, yeah, mix, so... You can actually pick and choose if you actually want to follow through with that movie too. So,
fuck yeah,
yeah, and so, yeah, the guy who, yeah, what are you?
He's just excited for spooky season.
Spooky season. This is the time of year where I just start screaming spooky for no reason. Just because, yeah, I'm so happy.
So
just,
here
just
for that.
Walking down the street in Churchill, he's like, spooky,
spooky,
and some neighbor walks out with a gun. And is like, what's spooky? Like, I was just Halloween. Like, oh.
Did you say spooky? No, spooky. Yeah. It's a different thing entirely.
Oh, we in the South, y'all.
Good, kind, good, sir. That, no, that is not at all.
That was good. Props, Hobbit. That was fucking good. So the man who just
my dear friend, no, that is not what I meant.
The man who actually I didn't have to bait into a racial joke. The man who started this whole shit show, I'm like, that's a bigot.
Hello. Definitely, yeah, check out GUIpodcast.com for links to all the shit that I do, all the shit that Steven does, all the stuff that everybody on the network does. Including social media links, rate, review,
you do a lot,
subscribe,
more,
follow, all that shit. Yeah, we all do a fucking lot.
Yeah, but you do a lot.
I'm more. Not. We are in a relationship, only partially romantic. But the last thing you do is start like listing things, and we're like, well, I did this and I did this, and you didn't even do the laundry. So I'm not paying attention to percentages of who does what. We both do a fucking lot for this network.
That's a partnership.
I'm
y'all.
Just acknowledging that you. What you bring to this fucking relationship.
And I'm just acknowledging that it's not about who does more or who does less. It's about the fact that we do it together.
Fine.
Okay.
Are y'all going to kiss now?
I hope so. Oh my God. Thank you for asking.
Win my dick.
Yes. Even better.
Like, spooky.
Yay.
Wait. That, again, I'm half black. What are
why?
You doing here?
There's a why.
Why are you doing
at the end of that?
What are you doing?
Enunciate.
Spooky. Get big with it.
Oh, shit.
Holy shit. All right. So. We might as well just get this started. So we're going to be round robining on all the different movies, yes, that we have picked, yes, for Halloween. We're going to be starting on the 30th of September. We had to work out where everybody got equal number of goes and then their Halloween picks and stuff. So it ended up where we had one extra day that we worked out.
Well, I actually want to think before we start, one thing that's different. I think instead of doing like the last days where everyone gets a movie pick, remember those was the last couple of days where everyone gets to pick that movie? It's just... the Halloween weekend pick. So it's going to go through the fashion of every person gets one movie through the Halloween weekend.
Yeah, yeah. Pretty much. So nice and clean and gives us time to do the shares. And we got a little drunken scene at the end as well. So makes room for that as well. So I'm the first one up and we're doing two numbered movies to start.
I'm interested to see what you picked. I wrote down a few just in case you picked one of the ones I picked.
Yeah, I meant to make sure that there wasn't any kind of crossover. So for mine... September 30th is 10 Cloverfield Lane.
Ooh.
Just out. See, I didn't put great that one entry. Down, actually.
Nice. Perfect.
Yeah, no. I thought about it, but I was like, you know, I'm not going to go with that, even though I love that fucking movie.
Oh, it's a great horror, sci-fi, thriller movie. I mean, it's hitting all those notes.
The acting was so good.
Now, the one thing, part of the reason why I wanted to pick this is that there is something very suspiciously similar that happened before 10 Cloverfield Lane. There was a French TV series in like maybe the mid 2000s called Metal Hurlant, which is the name of heavy metal. That was original comic name.
I have no idea what you're talking French about. Comic. This sounds amazing.
But the movie Heavy Metal, that was based on a French comic called Metal Hurlant. And there was a French series based on those comic books of just different little sci-fi vignettes. And there was a episode called Shelter Me. Was about neighbor that woke up in her older neighbor's fallout shelter and him saying, like, the world ended. There's a nuclear holocaust. We're stuck down here. And it has a lot of the same beats as 10 Cloverfield Lane. Wow. Not the same characters. It's not exactly the same, but it's eerily close. And this came out 10 years, 12 years before 10 Cloverfield Lane. Now, the episode is great on Metal Hurlant, and I think it's definitely available for rental, if not for Prime members on Amazon Prime.
Cool.
The series, and I definitely suggest checking it out. It's very campy, fun, sci-fi.
Live action or animated?
Live action.
Okay, yeah. Very cool.
Very fun. But it definitely hits a lot of the same notes as 10 Cloverfield Lane. The suspense in 10 Cloverfield Lane is significantly better. John Goodman is bringing all of his creepy. Oh,
he's amazing.
In that role.
He is so iconic.
In that
good.
Movie.
So good.
Yeah.
Everybody is hitting on all cylinders for the very minimal number of actors. That is a very smartly made movie to be not expensive.
Yes. Agreed.
That's an easy, like, well, nowadays probably $20 million movie. And you go like $20 million? Like, no, it does take that much to make a underground apartment movie nowadays. But the CGI at the end of it, I don't want to get too deep into the story if you're not familiar with it. But like, it's a continuation sort of in the same universe as Cloverfield. The shaky cam monster movie.
Mm-hmm. The marketing that they did for all of the Cloverfield movies are just exceptional. And what I love about that universe is that
I was thinking about the third one that hit Netflix.
That was like the prime example, but all of them had this just like, you don't know what you're going to get. And I love that about the Cloverfield universe is like, all the movies are vastly different.
And I
love that.
They can just keep that going. I mean, that's the beauty
of
that.
There's so many different ways that they can continue that. But 10 Cloverfield Lane is my favorite so far.
Yeah, I would agree. As much as I loved Cloverfield when it came out, I still
do.
Yeah, so
good.
And
me too.
It's got T.J. Miller before he was as the cameraman that's just doing this like goofy riffing narration throughout.
Yeah. That was one of his first films, wasn't it?
One of his first.
Yeah. This was such a departure from that, 10 Cloverfield Lane.
Oh, very much.
It's
straight
comedy.
Totally different tone.
I think they realized that because the ad-lib he did there is like, oh, you belong over here.
Yeah, basically. No shit, right. So, 10 Cloverfield Lane is starting us off. Next
great
up
pick.
On the list is Lowdown.
I got the number two.
Poop.
And, you know,
it's
like
a poop.
Like I said, I'm going. I want to bring some stuff to you that you might not have heard of, and the numbers was an option for me to give you something that clearly you've heard of, but I just recommend it because it's awesome, which I do have that. But I'm gonna go with 976 Evil.
We're all just very nostalgic.
Well, I mean, you know, so this bullied teen gets in contact with this thing called Horoscope through the phone. And summons the devil. That's pretty much.
Remember landlines?
You remember being a teenager and looking at 976 Evil and being like, I'm going to see titties. And then being let down on the lack of titties in that movie. Yeah.
But I also picked this because it does have some status in the horror world with who's associated. So you've got Stephen Geoffreys, who was in Fright Night. Mm-hmm. He was, you're so cool, Brewster. But then it was directed by Robert Englund.
So, what?
Oh, wow. I did not know that.
Yeah.
Wow. Nice.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
So, little deep cuts with the horror world, but also it's just a fun, I mean, it's borderline, like, right down the middle, five and a half out of 10. So it classifies as good, but it's not a great horror movie. It's just a fun, schlocky horror movie.
Super fun. Yeah.
And what bullied teen wouldn't want to get his revenge through the devil? Like, I mean,
clearly,
that's what I felt. Like,
I'm here for it.
I'm super down for that.
Yeah, so it's a fun watch. Definitely recommend that. I don't know if it's streaming anywhere, which I think we should mention if these movies are right now, currently, which means probably they will be through at least October on any services.
I think moving forward in future episodes, we can look into that and see what's available with our specific ones. But we didn't do a whole lot of that. So search it. You can type the movie and then streaming free and then see what's available.
Yeah, yeah.
I think 976 Evil is something that is probably well known among like hardcore horror fans, but is not generally known among other folks. So I think that's a great pick to try to expand your horror knowledge. That's so fun.
And it's such
a
deep cut that you could possibly find it on, if not Shudder, it might be on like Tubi or Pluto or one of those free.
It's not Pluto, so Tubi or deep Pluto, that you're not going to find it anywhere. Yeah.
Thank you.
Great pick.
Sweet. Next up, we got Will. You're bringing in the letter category. You're starting with A.
Yes. And I'm actually going to go to a movie that I saw at the Bird Theater for their midnight movie weekend I lived in Richmond.
Oh, fun.
Oh, I think I know what this is.
And it is American Werewolf in London.
Yes.
Wow. You saw that at the Bird.
Amazing. I saw it at the Bird the first week I lived in Richmond.
Wow.
It was either that or Anaconda.
was that your first time seeing the film?
No, I had seen the film before. I was just excited. I'd heard about the Bird Theater.
I was awesome.
I've got to go to this place. Turned out I'd totally forgotten that I'd been to the Bird when I was a little kid. I'd seen Fantasia there.
Wow.
Nice.
While they had like an actual live orchestra. But I didn't remember that until I was in the theater.
Oh,
and for those of you, I mean, obviously they aren't from Richmond. It's a classic old style theater. They've got the organ. They've got the big chandelier.
The organ does a show before the movie starts.
It's fantastic. But that's why American Werewolf in London, I was like, let's kick off the A's with a good old classic, kind of campy.
My favorite werewolf movie, actually.
And I love like connecting that experience to that movie
I
think everyone probably like remembers if you've seen American Werewolf in London, like when you saw it. And oh my gosh, did you immediately just fall in love with Richmond and the Bird after that? Because what a great movie
Welcome
to Richmond.
Such a great movie. And then to go to this wonderful theater and be, it was so, so great. And of course, the movie. I mean, let's give it a nod to like werewolf transformations.
Still one of the best ever. Right.
You got that,
time.
And then it's like second to. It's first. The only one after that, I would say, would be The Howling.
Yeah,
office scene of The Howling. Right,
same year.
I mean.
But The Howling, I believe there was some horror documentary that talked about how there was some special effects. Yeah, probably. The special effects crossover there that there were people that had worked on American Werewolf that ended up like not finishing out there. And then ended up getting picked up on The Howling and doing like a
Google, Facebook, Silicon Valley.
American Werewolf in London, takes it all day.
It's so gnarly. His face starts on the hands
and
just,
the feet and everything. And the back like, cracking.
Just in general that the movie like has this weird like ghost crossover too.
It's a comedy too.
Yeah.
Yes.
Directed by John Landis.
Yeah.
John Landis.
Who did the Thriller video.
Right.
Yes.
Vincent Price, zombies. I mean, whatever. Thriller video.
There it is. His dead friend was pretty gnarly looking by the end of the movie. He like slowly deteriorated. No, like
such effects, a masterclass in special
effects. Special effects throughout the entire movie.
Same thing, yeah.
Special effects throughout the entire movie.
Take me to the slaughtering lamb for a drink.
No shit. Yes.
It's in New York. There's a bar called Slaughtering Lamb in New York.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. Amazing.
Nice.
So,
all right, Katie, it is up to you for B.
Love it. So I'm going to recommend a pick that is I'm considering it a smart slasher movie. So back in 2006, found footage or mockumentary style horror was the jam. It was like just post Blair Witch and everyone was doing found footage horror. So this mockumentary I'm going to recommend to you is really well known among horror fans, but it flew under the radar back then. It's Behind the Mask.
Yes.
The Rise of Leslie Vernon.
Yes.
And it is so clever. And I love this film so much. It exists in a universe where the Freddies of the world, the Jasons of the world are actually canon. Like they really existed. That is a historical event in this universe. And it's all about Leslie, who is trying to become a legendary horror slasher. He wants to transcend and be this iconic villain. And you're literally witnessing him through every step of the process through the eyes of these graduate school like documentary filmmakers. And it's amazing.
It's such a good film.
Lay it on me, Lowdown. What you feeling?
I was going to say when we interviewed Robert Englund at Monster Mania back in 2017 or I think it was, he mentioned, when you talked about properties, and he mentioned he would love to revisit
Leslie
Vernon. Yes,
it needs
Vernon.
A sequel of some sort. Or
we asked him, like, what would he, you know, what property would he want to, you know, come back to? And he mentioned that Leslie Vernon.
That is so cool. Yeah. And Robert Englund in that film he's called the Ahab, but what that really means is, like, that gives his villain the credence that he's actually a real villain, because he's like, Robert Englund is like that detective that's following his trail and whatever. Mm-hmm. And he's like,
the Loomis,
I'm so excited that Robert Englund is following me, because that means I am legitimate.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
It's so funny. It is so clever. It is such a great just reinterpretation of the slasher subgenre. Well, please check it out.
Instead of just leaning on the tropes to make
the standard
slasher.
No, there are tropes, but
the tropes, but they are calling out
They're calling out the truth.
They're calling
out,
being like, this is what I need for this part of this story.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, exactly, calling out the tropes. It's almost like they took the found footage craze of that time, started from Blair Witch, but then they mixed it with what Craven was trying to do with Scream.
Yeah, very meta.
Here's all the tropes
meta.
Of a horror movie.
Yep. Yes.
And they were just like, all right, now we're going to combine the two.
Yep.
And there you go. And
yeah.
It was brilliantly done. Never
it's
been
brilliant.
Done before. Hasn't been done since.
No.
So...
Yes.
It's, it's on its own. It stands on its own.
And
its
is streaming on Shudder. So if you have a Shudder subscription, go watch
it. I'm gonna have to rewatch that this season, because it's been a couple of years. That's a great flick.
Strangely enough, it's not the first time in the last week it's been brought up. So
maybe that's becoming more of it's going into the place where it's like a modern classic in horror, and maybe that
slow
will,
burn into modern classic.
Maybe
definitely.
Get with enough conversation, we might get a second Leslie Vernon.
Yes,
I mean, I want that so much.
Me too.
I would love that.
So anybody, maybe when they want to share this episode, hashtag Leslie Vernon, and there we go. We just get
love
the hashtag going.
Perfect.
Seriously,
me for C. This one is, I was mentioning before we started that there were a couple of letters where it was like, I was excited about the property for the letter, but it was almost like, God damn it, I don't have a choice in the matter. I have to hit this for this letter. And this is one of those letters. Because of the kind of reemergence of this series of movies and how it was changed over its both reimagining and sequelizing at the same time, I had to do the new Candyman.
Yes!
SC, because they're
the new one really
okay.
I think people should see it.
It has now been in the theaters long enough that if you don't want to go to the theater to see it, which I do still suggest to do that if you're comfortable enough,
you can rent it at home.
You can rent it at home now as well, so it is worthwhile.
I'm surprised you went with the new one the first time versus going with the original. That's interesting.
Well, I think
everyone just sees the new one.
I think everybody knows Candyman. So,
well, now because of the new one, I feel like there were certain people that weren't real horror fans that didn't really
know
Candyman.
You know, I would say that Candyman was always kind of like the lesser slasher, the slasher that was still part of the conversation, but was never talked about as much as Jason or Mike Myers or Freddy.
Yeah, no, 100%. Exactly. And I always hated that when I was younger, because like that, when I watched that movie when I was younger, I was like 10 or 11. That made me very uncomfortable. That movie made me very fucking uncomfortable.
That movie fucked me up.
Right?
When I was a kid, I was 7 years old. I saw that fucking shit, and that ruined my childhood in the best way. And I loved it so much. But everyone should see Naya DaCosta's Candyman. Yes.
Absolutely. Exactly. Yeah. The original, though, like that hit a lot of the same marks on why I loved Freddy so much, is because it felt like there was something inescapable about the character, and not in that like slow trotting way that Mike Myers or Jason Voorhees is, but in that like almost kind of psychological
wherever you go, they are there.
They're already there. They're not
waiting.
Chasing you. They are waiting for you to show up to where they are.
They know where you're going to go because they're in your subconscious.
And there's something so fucked about that I definitely like connected with Candyman in that same way that I did Freddy. But the new one, I think what made it so much more interesting to me with the new one, and it doesn't mean that I like it better than, there's so much nostalgia attached to the original that I can't really say that it hits the same marks, and shouldn't, really.
Well, it's a sequel, too. It's not a remake. A lot of people get confused about it. It's not a remake. It's slated as a sequel.
But I think a lot of the conversations that started in the first movie were continued in the second movie in a much more concise way, without talking down the social commentary as much as the first one did to make the whites feel comfortable. Like, this one didn't feel like it needed to have that kind of like dumbing down of language.
Yes.
And I felt that was really important to the continuation of the story. The new Candyman is still my Candyman. Even if I'm not the direct audience that it's speaking to, I get to learn a lot of stuff from watching this new version that is trying to be safer in its approach in the first one, which I understand in 92 or whatever when it came out.
Yeah, 92,
And that was kind of what was exciting about the new one, is that it really hit on a lot of social stuff that I went, that's a good point. When they talked about like artists moving into like bad neighborhoods and the artists never really took credit for the gentrification that happened.
Yeah.
I'm like, fuck. Oh no.
Yeah.
Oh no. Yeah. Like it hit some points that made me feel uncomfortable, but that's a good thing.
Well,
you know,
Brianna's, oh wait, you haven't seen it. Never mind.
It's all good.
I just wanted to comment to that. Like, so Brianna's brother's boyfriend actually called him out on that. It's like, they were bitching about it. He's like, oh, you mean you did? And they're like, damn.
Yeah.
I just thought it was funny. But no, that's why I said this one really brings out Caprini Green as its own character.
Yeah.
In this film.
Yeah. Also, I think the Cabrini Green self inspired the storyline here because Cabrini Green is a real place.
In Chicago, yes.
And it got gentrified.
Right.
So how do you have that same conversation about Candyman when the place that Candyman was haunting now has like fucking like lofts and shit?
And
Costa and Peel went and checked it out. They just saw that and were probably like, all right, this is where we're starting. Like, it was a no-brainer. Yep. Like, all right, you wrote it for us. Thank you. Because the last building in Cabrini Green that was a project building went down, I think, in 2016. I was doing some research around about that. And it was like, so 5 years ago, the last project, and then you're just building in expensive fucking apartments, and there you go.
By the way, because we can only talk a couple minutes definitely check out the Mouths of Madness episode, because that was a great episode.
Did you enjoy it?
Yeah, I did. I really did. That's definitely worth checking out.
Because I really did try to go into the differences in tones, like you just kind of did with 92s versus the sequel.
Yeah.
How much you can talk about, what more you can do and say now in a film to make it hit like it does. Like
that movie
took the fuck
off. That new one hits.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But that wouldn't have flown at all. That would have bombed like a motherfucker.
Oh, 92? No. 92 was not ready for this version of Candyman.
No. Or the versions of Candyman.
Yeah. Fair. Yeah. Good point.
Coming straight from the Mouths of Madness, I'm Lowdown.
I'm F.U. Hunter.
Do you love horror?
We fucking do.
So this is a podcast dedicated to all things in cinematic horror. We're talking movies, television, composers, special effects artists. We're going to fucking cover it.
So if you love horror,
embrace the madness.
My name is Amy Bogard.
And I'm Mike the Hobbit.
And we are the hosts of Deeply Upsetting, where we use our expertise to answer your most upsetting hypothetical quandaries, such as, what non-wiggin animal deserves wings?
And what body part deserves a secret mouth?
Which cryptid is the worst roommate?
These questions and more that plague you will be answered on Deeply Upsetting, available anywhere you get your podcasts and at GUIpodcast.com.
Hey guys, Scotty Big Daddy Preston here. That's right, the Geek Father, asking you to join me here every other week with friends and family of the GUI Network as we go through all the trials and tribulations of being a geeky parent. So remember, join us or cry.
In a world ravaged by movie studios that keep rehashing the same things, only one podcaster has the guts to make it even worse. Join Mike the Hobbit as he traverses the internet to bring you some of the best and worst ideas for reboots, remakes, and reimaginings of some of your favorite and least favorite TV and film properties. Ideas like a John Waters He-Man movie, Fantastic Four the Musical, and Aliens done entirely with marionettes. What podcast would bring this evil upon the world? This is Smack My Pitch Up. Available anywhere you get your podcasts.
Hey geeks, we'll get back to 31 Days of Halloween in just a second. We just wanted to talk about our sponsors really quick. First off, of course, is Amazon.com. You buy products all the time from Amazon. Why not give a little bit of money back to Geeks Under the Influence while doing so? Just go to the link at GUIpodcast.com, and anything you purchase through that link, we get credit for. So all the movies we're talking about on this episode, you can get through the link at GYPodcast.com, and we get a little bit of credit for it. So that's the best way for you to spend the same amount on Amazon and still support your favorite podcast at the same time. Secondly, of course, is TeePublic. We have so many designs that are specifically for the Halloween season that are now out on our page, including a new design for this episode that says, let's get spooky. Get that or Alcoholoween, or we've got so many spooky designs, as well as designs for all the different shows on the network, and inside jokes from over the years of all the different shows. And they are on sale all the time. So go to GUIpodcast.com/store, click on the TeePublic link, or just click on the TeePublic logo on the homepage at GUIpodcast.com. That is the number one way to get merch and spread the word about GUI Network shows, as well as putting a little bit of money in our pocket to better our equipment and supplies that we need here on the network. So go check out that new design, this Let's Get Spooky design, as well as, you know, we've got buttons, stickers, magnets, coffee mugs, laptop cover, baby onesies. We've got all sorts of options for you on the Tee Public store. And now back to the episode.
All right. Now on to something less heavy. Now, again, in the horror world, this movie has slowly become a staple. But I remember the first time I saw it, I randomly picked it up at a video store. Like, I literally had no idea. I was like, oh, cool. I haven't seen this. Like, love the genre. So I'm going to bring it to you. And that is fucking Dog Soldiers.
My second favorite
werewolf movie. American Werewolf in London. My second favorite. I love The Howling. Don't get me wrong. That's like my third. But Dog Soldiers, something about that movie where you mix a military group out on a fucking like exercise fighting a family of fucking werewolves. Like, that's
solid.
It's so good.
It's great.
It's nonstop.
Great. When did Dog Soldiers come out? That
2002.
Was
2002.
Yeah. Yes. Right.
I knew it was right around 2000. Yeah. I want to say.
God, it's that, like, it's just, that opening it's scene is amazing. Right?
Oh,
yeah.
Great. And it's fucking movie.
The effects are amazing. Now, you don't get a transformation in this film. I will say that. You get like glimpses of one, but it's more about the height and the size of the wolves.
And their use of lighting in that movie too, both like silhouetted and then full like visage of these characters at different points.
There's
a little bit of that Jaws art in there where the less you see, the more you get.
There's that one scene where the dude thought he escaped the garage because he saw one of the wolves eating a dude's like head, and he ran out and then when he got back to the house, he stopped the car and then he saw breath in the window, it started fogging up. He's like, hey, you're fucking behind me, aren't you? And then just blood splattering.
Oh, so good. Good
scene. It's an amazing werewolf film, and it's out of the box, which I really loved about that because, you know, werewolves have been done and done again, and they were so out of the box.
Yeah, but this was that early 2000s point where, like, it had been done and done again, and this kind of really revived it for me.
Well, and that's
100%. That and Ginger Snaps, but yeah.
There was a lot of werewolf movies around that time, and Ginger Snaps, Dog Soldiers, and Brotherhood of the Wolf. Which is incredible. Yep,
those two, Ginger Snaps and Brotherhood of the Wolf, would have been brought up on previous calendars, so check those out.
God, Brotherhood of the Wolf is up there with American Werewolf for me.
It's so good.
It is,
but Soldiers is incredible.
Dog Soldiers is also definitely the top
non-stop.
Five.
It just didn't
it is relentless.
Stop. It's just like you're in a constant state of anxiety the whole time because with there being nonstop action, there's still you still jump. That's the crazy part when you can have a movie that doesn't really slow down to build up the jump, but you
it's
still
edge
jump,
of your seat. Yeah,
that's awesome. Just awesome. And there's a couple people from Game of Thrones in there.
You're right. Sorry, that's connected for me.
But back then, they were nobody. So that's just fun, you know.
Yeah.
Nice. Going back and rewatching it.
Yeah, for sure.
All right. So next one up, we got E with Will.
All right. I'm going for a fun one.
Okay.
And that's going to be Elvira's Mistress of the Dark.
Yes. Happy birthday, Elvira.
Yes, that's actually...
40th anniversary of Elvira.
Yeah. And, that's perfect. That's fucking
perfect. That's actually why it popped into my head. I was sitting there today. I was like, what am I going to do for E? And I'm scrolling through some stuff. And I see Elvira's birthday. Well, all right. There is my pick. I know what I need to do.
Not only that, but it's perfect timing. They just announced that Elvira is doing a Halloween special on Shudder, and I'm over the moon about it. I'm so excited.
That can we all look that good when we're, 70?
Yeah, she's 70 years old.
She is stunning.
How is she not only gorgeous, but also popping many boners at 70?
Absolutely.
I'm just saying,
like goals. Sorry.
I would be honored to be the cub to her cougar.
Beyond cougar. I don't even know what you are.
I think you're dragon slaying, but you know what? I'm here for it.
She's beautiful. We've seen her at cons. She is a lovely, beautiful
person. And also a sweetheart.
Yes.
Yeah. Total sweetheart.
She's a lovely, beautiful person. Yep. She's always ready to talk, always just excited to be in the mix.
An appreciation for the community, not just her fans, but just the community in general. She's
done a lot of pushing. She's done a lot for the community.
Absolutely.
The whole community and the genre in general.
There was a meme that went around a year or two ago about there needing to be like a witch movie where it's Dolly Parton and Elvira as like sisters. The White Witch and the Dark Witch, and then they're just like, and literally just do that, and whatever the plot is after that, nobody gives a fuck.
Honestly, I don't think many people gave a shit about the plot of Elvira, Mistress of the Dark. It was just fun. It was just a fun movie.
Dirty one-line jokes.
It was just an excuse to make dirty jokes.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's definitely on my list for this season for sure.
Yeah, just so gearing up for the new, right?
Yes.
Oh, I'm so ready.
We
haven't gotten a new live Elvira since what, like 90, early 90s?
When was the Haunted Hills?
99.
Oh, so late 90s.
I think, yeah. I want to say that maybe in the early 2000s, she did a couple like little mini vignette, like movie review kind of things. Yeah. But as far as a movie, nothing major.
And also, we gotta bring it up to the horror fans, the horror community, and the con section. Like, everyone's kept Elvira alive through that,
too. Oh, 1,000 times. She does cons
all the time.
And all the turnout and the photo ops.
All people recognizing that throughout the years and seeing the numbers have led to this happening again, too. The horror community kept also helped keep that alive.
Well, I got to give props to one of our GUI family members, Jen.
Oh, they went through that photo op? Good God.
They went through the photo op. She got her Elvira tattooed signed and then went and got it tattooed on later.
And then
Elvira actually, I believe, shared the picture of her
incredible
getting it signed.
Girl crush.
Yeah, I mean, and also, like, of course, she was over the moon about it because literally anybody that happened would be like, oh, I've shared my picture.
Mm-hmm. But Elvira, Mistress of the Dark, like, it was early 80s. It was just in the vein of like the Pee Wee movies. Super fun.
It was actually 88.
Yeah. Okay. Sorry. Late 80s.
Yeah, it was like,
but like 80s hardcore and just a lot of fun.
So fun. Yeah. So yeah, that's a great, fucking great choice. I'm on board for that. Katie, you got to follow that.
Yes.
With your F choice.
I give all of the F's, first of all, but for my
for this conversation,
I'm going to give you way back. I'm talking 1932 pre-code Hollywood.
Yeah, I know
We're going with Todd Browning's Freaks.
Oh my God.
And Freaks is just an incredible movie. It's one of my favorites of all time.
I fucking love this movie.
What I love about it is that the performers, so if you've never seen Freaks, the basic premise of it is you're following a carnival and there's a beautiful trapeze artist, and her plot is that she is going to murder one of these sideshow performers in order to get his inheritance. And so you're watching this movie and it's all unfolding, and then the sideshow performers find out about this plot and then they extract their revenge on the trapeze artist. All of these actors were real people, real sideshow performers with real disabilities. One of my favorite ones is Prince Randian, aka the Human Torso, because he just had a lack of limbs.
I knew it was going to be.
I fucking love Prince Randian.
The knife scene haunts my dreams.
Yes.
Where he's crawling, I think, under the stagecoach with a knife in his mouth.
Yes.
No limbs.
So creepy.
So, like, what are you going to do?
Muddling
with that
in the
knife?
Mud.
But, like, early on in the film, you saw him light a cigarette with just his the ground in the mouth. So, like, you'd had that that, like, he could light his own cigarette and start it. Now, what could he do with a knife?
Yeah. I love that
and
question.
And again, can we talk about the year again?
1932.
Like, think about that.
Yeah.
Think about
1932.
That.
1932. Yeah.
That was a year after Dracula and Frankenstein.
Yes.
And now we get this. It's like, whoa.
And if you have the opportunity, I'm assuming it's probably on Blu-ray at this point, but I have the deluxe edition that has like the documentary about it as well. And they talk about how Todd Browning like really got like huge appearances at Coney Island after the movie. Yeah. They became like celebrities after this movie came out. And he was really involved in the quote unquote freak community after that to
a
degree.
And Todd Browning actually really did a stint in a carnival circus for a little bit. So he had that lens when he was making this movie, and it shows, and it's just so wonderful. And yeah, it's just incredible that came out in that year. I love that movie. Everyone should watch it.
Fuck yeah.
Yes. Everyone should watch it. All right, Hobbit. Now this is going back to you, you got some G spot action.
A little G spot action. I think for this one, I'm going to go with a more modern film that is definitely horror, but a lot of thriller as well. And it hits on some notes because growing up as a punk rocker, there's a lot of stuff that happens in this movie that really speaks to like traveling bands that are just trying to do the best that they can.
I know what you're going with.
But it also has the most brilliant villain performance of Jean-Luc
yes,
Picard.
It does.
Is this a Star Trek reference?
A little Jean-Luc as the leader of like a Nazi group.
Yes. A heroin kingpin
as well. We're talking Green Room.
Yes.
So good.
Green Room. That movie's good.
What a fucking
Nightmare?
A wonderful surprise of a movie. The movie's a nightmare.
Yeah.
But a surprise of, it just came out of nowhere. And then everybody was talking about this movie.
Yeah.
Once it came out. Because, of course, because Patrick Stewart, I mean, of course, he's an incredible actor. But such a different turn for him as an actor. And he kills it as this, like, older Nazi fucking organizer. What I love about this movie is that the basic premise, to not, like, spoil the movie, is that there's this touring punk rock band that they go to, I think, San Francisco, and then the show they were planning on doing is canceled.
Right.
And so a dude that interviewed them and you know, for his podcast.
Yeah, of course.
It's like, oh, well, you know, my brother or cousin or something, you know, there's a gig. It's pays well, but like, it's a little bit like right wingy and stuff. They're like, fuck it, we need the money. So they go, and then turns out that they're, you know, these like anti-racist punks playing a fucking Nazi.
They played Nazi punks. Yeah. Fuck off.
Right,
yeah.
Wing was not the right terminology.
The right wing was a little of a soft language choice there.
Because yeah, that was a
woo. Yeah. And then chaos ensues. And I don't want to get into the full plot, but holy fuck, there's so much tension. There's so much real visceral, like real life horror that's happening in this movie.
It's not plausible, because it is a fantastical outcome that happens to this crew, but you could like actually see this happening, that you're at this,
it's
like
grounded enough.
Yeah, exactly. You know what I mean?
A ghost doesn't come out. Yeah. Like, you don't have Winston Churchill's ghost coming up being like, I hate Nazis.
You can see this club existing, is all I'm saying.
I will say that,
although I kind of wish there was a version where Winston Churchill's ghost shows up.
You see, you definitely see the theater training of 1A John Patrick Stewart.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, he's amazing in it. Theater training,
but no, but just because the hard turn he does. And he does actually like two turns throughout the film, too.
Yeah, he sure does.
Especially at the end.
Yep.
So it's like you really see his training. Because you didn't get a lot of that. You know, clearly, you know, he can act, but you didn't see his birth in a lot of the stuff before that.
Well, he does this beautiful, like, very soft-spoken, evil kind of vibe where, like, the walks
calm,
off
cool,
and carry a big stick
leader
kind of vibe.
Yeah.
And then he has these breaks at points where the closest to that kind of break that you've seen in him is, like, the line must be drawn! Yeah! From Star
right,
Trek.
Right.
So,
yeah.
And then, which is a little bit bigger, but this was a much cleaner, like arc of his character getting more frustrated and more angry. And,
yeah.
Brilliant fucking movie. Definitely check it out. I think it is free on many streaming services at this point.
Yeah, so. I feel like right now it is.
Yeah.
Highly
yeah.
recommended. I love it.
I think it's even on Netflix right now. So
is it?
It might be. Wow. If not, it's on Prime or one of the big ones. It's on. Okay. So, so Green Room. So we're on to Lowdown with H.
And for H, I had a couple that probably would have been more accessible or people already knew about them.
Oh, so. H for a Halloween movie is going to be
I mean, aside from Halloween, because that's a no-brainer. Like,
yeah.
Dirt. but I remember the first time I watched this movie, it was probably like 3 or 4 years ago, fucking fell in love with it. And I was like, okay, this is the one I'm giving you guys. The House of the Devil.
Yes.
2009 film.
Fuck
it's
yeah.
Set in the 80s. And one of the things I love about this film is, like I said, it's 2009. This is before doing the retro 80s was like the thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
This is one of the first horror films to do the retro 80s. But it was such a slow burn film. It didn't get picked up on.
Yeah.
You know, like, I mean, House of the Devil didn't, it didn't like take
no,
like,
it didn't.
Steam until
yeah.
like 3 years after it came out. Right. But. It's such a slow burn movie too. Like there's a college girl who needs to make some money and she just needs to house sit. Literally go to someone's house and house sit. She finds an ad in the paper, pay you this much, house sit. Family wants to go out. Cool. Goes to the house, has a whole house to herself, house sitting. Starts hearing some weird shit, starts seeing some shit move. Oh fuck. And then I don't know, I'd say about halfway into the movie, maybe 2/3 of the movie, then you start getting like it's got some really cool effects. It gets gory. And then the last 20 minutes of the movie is a satanic fucking nightmare.
Yes, like, absolutely. So, her name is fucking escaping me. Who is the director that did Lady Bird? If no one knows it, it's okay. Mm-hmm. We will move on, but look it up.
Was it Gina Gershon? Greta Gerwig.
Greta Gerwig, she stars in House of the Devil, so she's part of that. It's got Tom Noonan from Last Action Hero and other fame.
Yes.
It's so good. There's this whole crew of people who do horror films, and they have been dubbed called Mumble Gore. And look up Mumble Gore.
Noah,
all of them.
Baumbach is one of the big directors.
Adam Wingard, Simon Barrett, all of it. They're all in that. Joe Swanson, Swanberg.
You've got but Baghead is one of the big early ones.
Yes,
in Mumble Gore.
This is part of that shit.
Creep.
House of the Devil. Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
But anyway, you need to watch this because when you watch this, as just as Lowdown says, if you did not know that this movie was released in 2010,
I mean, it's a while
whatever
ago.
You would think that it was like actually filmed in 1978 or 1983,
exactly.
They do a really good job of that shit. It is so good. Slow burn, definitely recommend it. I love that shit.
And good call to that. I mean, the fact you brought it back in the 70s, because it really does, when I say suspense, it really does fall into the, you know, John Carpenter's Halloween level of horror film.
Yes.
Where it is a slow burn, the way they film it.
Atmospheric.
And then you just get that little, you just get that payoff at the end. And so that was definitely 78 turning into the decade 80s style of horror that they do a great job with it.
Great pick.
I have to admit, it's going to end on my list because I have not seen it.
Really good. You'll love it.
I recommend it to everybody. It's a great film.
I'm sold. I'm here. Nice. I'm here for it.
Nice. We got Will.
Will is next.
With I. I'm interested in this. Let's see what we got.
So
this is, you debated about this.
Yes,
one.
I'm still I'm still on the fence. Like I.
Oh, you maybe tell us both. I don't know if that's allowed.
I mean, I might make an honorable mention in case I'm going with it. If you are, it is a triggering, horrible, and violent film.
Oh, okay.
But
haven't done many of the like the deeply problematic horror movies yet on this list. So
this one's pretty,
that's where I'm
right.
Yeah. It was either this or a child's film. Maybe next year I'll throw the child's film in there.
There we go.
But this one, I'm gonna go with it.
It's not a child's film.
No.
Yeah.
If you have never seen it and you are in for a ride, I spit on your grave.
Yeah.
And not the original.
Not the new one.
Yeah, original.
The
yeah.
1978.
Oh, that movie, this movie is,
I mean, it's
gruesome, painful, challenging horror movie.
Challenging is probably the best.
Yeah.
It really is. It is hard to make it through that film.
It is. There's just, it's hard to watch. And then the vengeance on it is just, it's your classic. I don't want to go into it too much for everybody. There's some rape.
Yeah.
A lot of it.
Some is a soft choice there.
And then it's your vengeance film. I mean, and
the level of rape, when we say this, it's like, okay, if you thought there was a lot of rape in the original Last House on the Left by Wes Craven,
right?
It's more than that.
It's like 30 or 40 minutes.
It's rough. Woo! It's like someone literally watched that movie and was like, because Last House on the Left came out before this, and was I can do better than that. I'm like, wait, why would you want to?
Why would you want to? Ugh.
They did it.
But it's an uncomfortable, it's dark.
Cool. It does what it's supposed to do. I feel like the director, the movie serves its purpose.
Mm-hmm.
I think when he put this film out, and I can't be mad at him for that, right?
Yeah,
that's what he was aiming to do. Make you uncomfortable, make you just want to take a fucking shower, man.
Detest the people in this film. You just, by the end of it, there's just no, you don't feel like there's anybody likable, you know?
Yeah.
No. Right. Like, ugh.
So.
I mean, it's not rocket science why this movie came out. It's like a tale as old as time, right? Like, this woman goes to this house in order to do her, she's just there by herself to do her fucking thing, to write some shit. She's hanging out. She's on the hammock. She experiences this horrible trauma. And this was, as you noted, came out in the 70s. I mean, this is literally almost 50 years ago.
But I mean,
it could be written yesterday, or today. But that revenge exploitation era, it was totally a thing and still is to this day.
I mean, they call her One Eye came out within at least a couple of years of this movie.
And this is really uncomfortable to watch, as you said, but it is so good and necessary. And just like, I love this movie. And I think that it's a great example of that subgenre.
The thing that is amazing to me is that when this movie came out, the director called it a feminist film.
Yeah.
And I understand what the intention was with this movie, is that part of the conversation in the movie was that the thing that was taken away from this woman from being like abused and assaulted. Right. She used that same sexuality to murder and these people that took that away from her.
Absolutely.
So it was like reclaiming that sexuality in a way. That was a problem that I had with the remake is that instead of, I mean, it was still rough, the rape in the the remake, but instead of there being some kind of like reclamation conversation that's happening with the kills that happen, they turned into like saw traps.
Yeah, that was the thing.
There was like a dude over a bathtub full of acid.
Torture porn thing.
Yeah. And it just took away all of the feelings of her getting something back from it.
It didn't feel as real.
Either. It didn't. Yeah. It wasn't as genuine. Yeah, I agree.
So it just came off very
Like,
and the first movie gives you a little bit of like the I need to take a shower after this.
It sure does. I own it. It's a, I mean, I agree.
The second one is like, I mean, talk about a wire walk kind of remake to do, and they just they did it so ham-handedly. Yeah.
And then they made sequels to the remake.
Yeah,
they sure did. Yeah.
Like, there's like two or three sequels.
I still spit on your grave.
I didn't spit on your grave.
Yeah, there's like three of them.
I didn't even care.
Spit on your grave. It's crazy. Yeah, seriously. There's like two or three remakes to the
gross.
Two or three sequels to the remake, sorry.
I will not be recommending those.
No. Recommend those.
I'll do a whole deep dive and then, don't worry.
I would even say that I don't think, Will, I think part of the challenge for this is that you're not necessarily recommending the movie so much as that it is an important movie in the conversation of horror.
Absolutely.
There's no way you can go through all of these years that we're going to be doing this, you know, and not go ahead and have to bring up I Spit on Your Grave.
Yep.
It's real. It is something that we all fantasize about as a woman. Sorry. Yeah. Extracting revenge on these assholes is what I mean.
I was like, fantasize.
No, that's what I mean. Like, extracting revenge on the people that do this.
As Hobbit said, like, it's not a movie that you're actually saying, like, definitely go out and watch. I think
so good. Bring your kids.
It comes from the film nerd of like, This was a horrific film that was made, and it's there. It's kind of like watching a Serbian film. Like,
you
watch it once, and that's it. I'm done. I don't need to see it again.
Cannibal Holocaust. Those are like culturally important horror films.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Right. You know where you saw I was going with that.
Yeah.
So I went ahead. There it is.
Okay. I think you were right to pick that because
it's an
interesting conversation to talk about that, what it represented.
And it's honestly kind of a tough conversation sometimes.
It is.
Too.
Yeah.
It's a cinematic film that, like I said, if you are of a cinemaphile, you need to. It's something you need to explore, talk about.
Yep.
You know, how did you react to that? You know, that kind of thing. It's a whole, so much conversation with that movie.
Yeah.
All right. So, Katie?
Yeah. I actually love my pick after William's pick of I Spit on Your Grave because what I'm going to do with Jay is a very feminist film. It's Diablo Cody. It's Karen Kusama. It's Jennifer's Body.
Yep.
And Jennifer's Body it came out in 2009. It's only 12 years old, but I really consider it to be like a very cool feminist progressive horror movie. And it's awesome. Like, first of all, my number one question is, in what world is Amanda Seyfried like not the hottest girl at school?
No shit, right?
Seriously.
No, you don't understand. Her hair was in a ponytail.
Her hair was in a ponytail. She had glasses.
Oh my God.
She had paint on her river. Sorry. Yeah.
No,
Jennifer's Body it's so cool. It's so fun. It is such a stylish vampire succubus film, but also has a message. And it is so from 2009 because Adam Brody is in it from the OC, and he's like, do you know how hard it is to be an indie band right now? And I have to make a deal with the devil in order to be popular. And that was such a thing in 2009. And that is amazing. So you have to, it's just so
funny. Unless you were Phantom Planet doing the theme song for the OC, I guess.
It's so poignant to that era. And it is just I love this film so much, but Talk to Me, Lowdown.
I'm glad you actually brought that movie because early this year, came to a realization that film was supposed to be done tongue-in-cheek.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, it is totally not serious.
I was like, this is garbage.
Yeah.
But now...
No, it is completely
Now, the CGI
sarcastic.
Is still garbage.
Yeah.
You can't fix that. That is utter shit. It looks like dog shit.
It does. I can't fix that.
But knowing
the
that,
one
I'm
line,
like, okay.
The one line that I hate so much. And, like, I did the same thing where I rewatched it because when it came out, I wasn't that into it. And I was a big fan of Diablo Cody at the time. Her memoirs about working in a strip club for like a year was Hard Candy or something. Or Candy Girl. Candy Girl was the name of it.
Hard Candy's also good. But
Hard Candy's
also good. That's a different movie.
Also one side.
And then, of course, Juno. And then and then she's like, I'm going to make a horror movie. And I was like, well, I love Juno. Juno is a horror movie? Cool. Fucking baby comes out, kills people, has fucking spikes.
Yeah, because immediately it was going to be Juno in a horror movie. That's exactly how that works.
Juno 2, Baby's Revenge. Jennifer's body was like the first kill of the baby of Juno was like Jennifer. But no, I was excited to check it out. I didn't get what they were doing, kind of the same way that when Scream came out, I didn't understand that it was a parody of all the tropes of horror. And so I didn't really appreciate it until I got older and realized that Wes Craven was parodying a genre that he helped create. Which is brilliant.
It's so brilliant.
Jennifer's Body, same way, that it is being a parody of, like, we're still talking about, like, body autonomy and, like, you know, and the conversation about how dangerous it can be just to literally be a woman.
Yes, exactly.
And the one thing that I still have misgivings about, even after having a better appreciation of this movie, is the, like, I'm into girls too line.
Oh, yeah, there was this weird lesbian subplot.
But, like,
the bi, bisexual.
Yeah, but, you don't know I'm bisexual, so I can eat you too, or something.
Yeah.
It was a weird throw-on line that just didn't land well at all.
I agree.
It's still very awkward and weird.
It was awkward, yeah.
Agree.
But, yeah.
Signs of the Times. Having rewatched that,
it moved up, you know, as far as my respect and review of the film.
Yep. Definitely haven't seen it since it first came out, so I'm
going
to
rewatch
it.
Please give it a rewatch.
I'm going to have to think about it on a different level now.
Like I said, effects are still shit.
Oh well, you can't change that.
Effects are still ass.
You can't,
because everyone has had to use fucking computer. Lazy bastards. I will never give a movie a pass for shitty effects. I will never give a movie a pass for that.
Or
I just
good
can't.
CGI.
It's not in my coding.
Yeah. No.
All right. So the next one up, I've got K for this one, and I bounced around a couple ones, but I was actually on an episode of Beautiful Disasters about this movie, and because it does deal with one of my phobias, and also it's a very fun, very bad horror movie starring one William Shatner. So I've got two of the captains of the Enterprise on my list of things. We've got a movie called Kingdom of the Spiders.
Never seen
it. We showed that at GalaxyCon.
We showed that at GalaxyCon. Yes. We did.
Oh, that movie.
And it is to me. So basically, this small town gets completely overrun with giant tarantulas. Or not giant tarantulas.
Sold.
Like, I mean, regular sized tarantulas. But they literally use tarantulas in the movie where they like trucked in, I mean, literally tons of tarantulas into this small town.
Real?
To the point, real tarantulas. And to the point where the town, even after the filming, had like an infestation of tarantulas. This movie is lousy, just like lousy with tarantulas. They're everywhere in this movie. And Shatner is like the sheriff, I think, of the town. And this like insect doctor, whatever, comes and is like, yeah, there's weird shit happening. He's like, yeah, I want to fuck you. And she's like, no. And then all the girls in town are like, no, everyone wants to fuck him. You should probably fuck him. And she's like, oh, maybe I'll fuck him. And then spiders. And then spiders. And
spiders. No, he's not wrong, though. And then spiders.
So they don't connect at all to the tarantulas? He's just a sex god?
He's a local sheriff sex god guy that also...
Lots of spiders.
No connection to spiders.
No, I think a spider might have... Didn't a spider like bite a horse or he had killed his son or something?
I'm sure.
This movie was a fucking
There was
train
some
wreck.
Subplot was... where like his son died or something, and I don't know. It doesn't matter. The basic point of this movie is that
it doesn't matter.
It's basically this town being overrun with spiders where they end up in this cabin and the spiders are like covering it and they're coming in through the vents and stuff. And it's
Why
campy as fuck
this?
Where it's not scary unless you're actually freaked out by spiders, which I am. And it is haunting for me, this movie. But
it's actually one of the movies where it's like the guy who thought up Arachnophobia was like, we're not going to go that hard.
This is a perfect companion piece of Arachnophobia.
I don't
want to
accidentally cause like an infestation of a non-native species.
Yeah.
Seriously.
This movie,
it is so fucking
campy and it's so stupid. And they killed so many tarantulas making this movie.
Yeah, there's no way they could have a disclaimer at the end saying no tarantula was harmed. No, bitch, y'all killed some
motherfuckers. I believe this was like the late 70s this movie came out, so it was well before a lot of the like animal clear lines of like taking care of animal stuff. So that's kind of a bummer.
Yeah.
As much as I hate spiders, that still kind of sucks.
Look at that heart. He fucking loathes spiders.
I loathe spiders. But also tarantulas are the least dangerous to me. Like, they're big enough where if I see one, I'm like, fuck you. Mm-hmm. Like, I'll get you. Yeah. They're not going to crawl into my shoe and without me noticing. You know, true. Like, if a tarantula's in my shoe, I'm going to see it. Like,
also, depending on where they're at, you just knock them off and they shatter. So there's
that. Exactly. So, yeah, Kingdom of the Spiders, I'm sure it's available somewhere streaming. It might even be on fucking YouTube for all we know.
Damn.
It's,
I'm sure that's on, yeah, that's
it's
on
an old ass movie. Yeah. So, yeah. So to L, and, we are breaking this episode into two parts. So instead of doing a GY Nights, next week, we're just going to finish off the last end of this, list next week. So this will be the last letter for this part, and then we'll break off. You'll hear the second half of this next week.
Well, I feel like this could be a good one to break off, and that's okay, cool. So I thought hard about this one, depending on which film, because this will also be a future episode on From the Mouths of Madness. But I'm going with the remake for this one, and I'll tell you why. A film called Let Me In.
Yes.
Why are you going to go with remake?
Yeah.
Let the right one in is because I was thinking about this podcast specifically.
Sure.
Like, we talk about how Let the Right One In is solidified in horror fans and the horror culture.
They're both good.
For people, exactly. For people that don't necessarily want to watch a Swedish film.
Yeah.
You know? And also,
words are hard.
Yeah. Yeah. But also, this one, the original was a little more artistic.
This
one focused more where they added a little more gore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the effects amped up a little bit.
It was Americanized a bit.
It was Americanized. Yeah. So I was thinking that's really my main reason for picking this movie. Both films are good. And I do recommend 100% going and watching Let the Right One In. That fucking film is amazing.
Oh, it's incredible.
Like, it's a beautiful fucking film. But you will get more of like your bloodlust, your quick and easy kind of like story moving along thing with the remake.
Yeah, it's like the remake is the ADD version and not in a bad way. I don't say that because the fun Cliff Notes version.
Yeah,
the Cliff Notes. Gets to the point. But the original one is so just.
There's something about that movie.
It's very well written.
So well shot, too.
The cinematography.
But they're both really good, and that is not always the case in those situations.
We've only had a few. Yeah. We've already covered a few of Among Madness, so
you're not wrong through our catalog at all. It recommends that.
So that's why I went with that. I went with the American.
I love it. Mm-hmm. I love it. Yeah.
All right, and on that, we're going to finish this first half of Geeks Under the Influence. We're going to come back next week for the next episode. Where we finish on the second half of the alphabet going into Halloween and everything. So remember to rate, review, subscribe, all that shit. And we'll find you next time for another episode of Geeks Under the Influence. I'm Mike the Hobbit. Join us or die.
Shut the fuck up, dude.
Join us or die. Join us or die. Or I will swallow your soul.
GUIPodcast.com.
Keep the bees or die.